Good morning. Welcome to the Eastman Financial Report. I'm Dan Eastman, your host. Today is Wednesday, November 1st, 2023. Thank you so much for tuning in. We really appreciate your viewership. Thank you for watching us on WVW-TV. We are a great enthusiastic participant in the message that WVW-TV conveys, and we're very thankful to be on this particular network. And as you know, WVW-TV is a network that is supported by its viewers and sponsors. We're not a commercial network. We don't sell commercials, and we don't run commercials in the middle of our programming, but we do appreciate the sponsorship and the donations and viewers like you who are concerned with hearing alternative viewpoints and are willing to support our efforts. We've been around since 2006, and we hope to be around for many, many more years. And of course, that's all made possible by generous donations from people like you and also our sponsors. The sponsor for my program, of course, if you've been a frequent viewer, is Swiss America Trading, which is an American company based out of Arizona. And they make a market in precious metals. So if you're interested in buying some precious metals, tangible precious metals, which means metals you hold in your hand, you take possession of, Swiss America is a fine purveyor of such products. And if you'd like more information, you can give them a call at 1-800-519-6271. Tell them Dan Eastman asked you to call, and they'll send you some free information about the tangible precious metals space. You can go to their website, SwissAmerica.com, and you can see what they have to offer. They have products and prices and terms and conditions. And if you use the promo code Eastman, which stands for Eastman Financial Report, they will be happy to send you free information. And you can also take advantage of a current special they're running, which is a great deal right now. You can get a Liberty Standing Half Dollars in silver, silver half dollars that are bullion coins minted by the federal government. And you can get those for $13.50 a piece. And that includes shipping to your home or office or business. And that's a great deal because if you do any purchasing online, you're going to realize quickly that shipping costs, or they add a lot to the cost of the product. Well, here you can get for $13.50, including shipping, these silver half dollar coins. And there's a limit of 250 coins per person. And of course, this deal only lasts until they're sold out, and then that's the end of it. But these make a great way to enter into tangible metals investing if you're thinking of putting some of your portfolio into metal in your possession. Or even more interesting, these are great gifts at that price point as we enter into the gift-giving season. And of course, now it's November 1st, Halloween is behind us, and we move into Thanksgiving and then the holiday season of the December. Lots of gift-giving going on between now and the end of the year. And when you're sitting there puzzling as to what you should give your nephew or niece or old Uncle Joe, give them the gift of precious metals, because that's something that will not end up in a landfill next year. They will not throw it in a drawer somewhere. Well, they might, but the point is nobody throws precious metals away because they're precious. And historically, these are stores of value. So if you want to give something to somebody that's going to go up in price over time, a precious metal gift is a great idea. And when they're running the $13.50 special, This is a great time, plus it's free shipping. So you can do all your Christmas shopping. You just go to SwissAmerica.com and use the promo code Eastman. Get yourself the $13.50 special, including free shipping, and you'll have all your gift purchasing done ahead of time, and you can enjoy the holidays instead of running around doing last-minute Christmas shopping. So anyway, give that some thought, but certainly when you do buy precious metals, you want to find a strong vendor, somebody who's been in the business for a long time, a trustworthy source, and certainly Swiss America meets those conditions. So they've been a long-term sponsor of WVW-TV. We do, we're very thankful for them. We're thankful for the support they give us, and certainly as a viewer, you would give them some consideration when you're buying precious metals for yourselves or your friends or family. So give them a call, 1-800-519-6271, and take advantage of that $13.50 silver half dollar. It's a great gift. I mean, for little kids or kids in high school, you want to teach them the value of money. There's nothing more impressive in the mind of a young person than a silver coin, because you think about what money was versus what money is. And I think there's some real value in understanding that just because it's a little round thing with somebody's face on it, there's importance to precious metals. And I think that's a continuing way to continue the culture and to continue the understanding of money. And of course, from my perspective as a former educator, maybe a current educator, you want to think about money from a deeper perspective other than your paycheck comes in and your paycheck goes out. Let's start thinking about money and wealth and, you know, assets and things like that and debt. And this is a way to do that. So anyway, give Swiss America a call. They're a great company, 1-800-519-6271. And or go to the website, SwissAmericaTrading.com. Okay, let's talk about the news today. Of course, today is November 1st, and we are now into the second last month of the year. We are well into the fourth quarter of the year. And at the end of the calendar year, the fiscal year for most of us, we find ourselves looking into wondering what 2023 will look like in its final form after all the adjustments are made. And we wait with bated breath and eager anticipation of what 2024 will look like. It should be an interesting next couple of months. Right now, we know that the Federal Open Market Committee is meeting in Washington to decide the fate of the interest rates in the economy. And what, as I talked about yesterday and probably ad nauseum over the last couple of months, the Federal Reserve Open Market Committee will be looking at the 12 regions of the Federal Reserve, because each of the 12 regions has a Federal Reserve Bank and there's a, you know, organization, and they do a lot of data research to try to determine what their region looks like with respect to the economy. Is it growing? Is it contracting? And of course, it's not all equal. I mean, out of 12 regions, some are growing and some are contracting. And when you're in the Federal Open Market Committee meetings today and tomorrow, you're going to have to take that information into consideration. Well, this part of the country is hot and this part of the country is not. And you've got to make national policy decisions based upon a lot of input coming in. And then, of course, what they'll do is their monetary tool is to either increase interest rates or leave them where they are or decrease the interest rates. And all the smart money and all the smart talk on Wall Street is that they're not going to do anything again. Well, we'll see. It's up to them. And they'll decide based on the inputs. Now, we've been talking about these inputs going into the public sphere of information. You know, I like to talk about my great big ball of the private sector economy. And information is critically important in that big ball of our GDP, our domestic economy. We need information. And of course, in anyone in business knows the more information you have and the better the information, the more of a strategic advantage you have as compared to your competitors and to other sectors. So information is a really important thing. And of course, if you've ever dabbled in stock trading on Wall Street, you know that the rumors fly fast and furious all day long, and the market goes up and down and up and down based upon rumors. And there are, you know, people who will be reporting factual information, which is important to whether a stock will go up or down. And there are people who throw information into this just to, as a distraction, so that they try to manipulate the markets by putting false information in, where that's a crime. But the point is that the information is a gigantic, fast-moving marketplace. And I think we see that in the news, you know, especially like this Israeli thing. There's a lot of news that came out hot and heavy early on that turned out to be inaccurate, but it shaped public opinion. And then there's this echo effect of that information that long after it's debunked, the stuff is still rattling around in the slower moving sectors of the information market. And it has a profound impact. So information is important. And you know, we've been looking at different data points over the last couple of weeks. And all of this information is going into the minds and heads not only of the Federal Open Market Committee members who are meeting, but the staff who prepare all their memos and all of their, you know, big ring binder full of paper, and it tells them what they should be thinking and doing and this and that. And of course, we've heard that, you know, the gross domestic product, my ball here, the great economy, has expanded 4.9% year over year. And that's normally a really good number to see an expansion of 5% of the ball. Now, it's coming up off of a slower period during the COVID situation. But at the end of the day, if you're on the Federal Open Market Committee, and let's see, it's probably, yeah, it's right in the middle of lunch hour out in Washington. It's 11:40 here and it's 12:40 over there, and they're sitting having lunch and they're thinking, boy, what are we going to do? Well, that information suggests that the economy is doing pretty well at 4.9%. We also see other indicators coming in that are basically good news. And the federal Open Market Committee members, the Fed members, will react to that good news, like the U.S. job openings. You know, the jobs available in the economy increased to 9.6 million. Now, remember last month we keep talking about these numbers. That was a bigger number too. It was in 9.1. Now it's 9.6 million jobs. Well, these are openings, job openings, or people, apply within, as they say. Well, when you're on the open market committee and you see, wow, boy, the ball's grown by 4.9%. That's a 5% annual growth rate. That's pretty hot. And we got, we're looking at a big number, 9.6 million jobs are going unfilled. And we look at, initial jobless claims numbers are small. They're at 200,000 to 218,000 initial. And these are reported out every Thursday by week. And then you look at the continuing, and of course the continuing is continues to creep up, but the initial job applications are low. Then you get the perception that the economy is doing really pretty good. We got inflation buzzing along, and we know that our inflation is, our bogey is 2%. I mean, that's what theoretically, somebody somewhere calculated that 2% is a good number for inflation, and we're at 3.8% overall and 4.2 core inflation. And core, of course, excludes fuel and food. So you're seeing that inflation is still way above 2%, and the big ball of the economy is growing by 5%, and there's 9.6 million jobs opening. This doesn't suggest we're in any type of recessionary environment. As a matter of fact, it sounds like we're in a growth environment. And if you're trying to bring that inflation number from 3.8 to 4.2, depending on how you slice it, down to 2%, well, that suggests that you got to pull the punch bowl back because the party's a little too hot, which means raise interest rates yet again to try and slow down the housing market and slow down the economy because it's going too fast. Okay, that's what they're looking at. But when you look at other news, and this is the purpose of this show, is to basically look at the good news and the bad news that's coming out into the information marketplace. And of course, we're not on the Federal Open Market Committee. There's only 12 people who are. But at the end of the day, as mere mortals who live in this beautiful country, and we have to make economic decisions that are in our best interests as well as others, but certainly ours, take care of ourselves, then we have to be able to filter through these numbers. And this is what, I want to give you the other side. It's sort of a yin and yang thing, it's a bipolar thing, or there's two opposite forces going on. And what we're seeing on the good news side is, boy, it's good news. Everything seems to be zipping along. But then we start to see these manufacturing survey numbers. Like I was talking about the Dallas Fed, basically the Dallas Fed itself said, boy, we're really starting to see deterioration, and we're seeing consumers in shock. Now we're seeing the manufacturing ISM survey. It shows that the core economy is slow, that it's the backlog of pipeline work in these factories and manufacturing facilities is shrinking, it's drying up. And what it's telling us is, from the manufacturing perspective, things aren't necessarily humming along really great. So how do you get this 4.9% growth in the ball of the economy? And the manufacturing sector is telling us that their ability to sell products into the global marketplace, not just in the U.S., but American manufacturers sell globally. Their demand for their products is shrinking. And what that tells you is their revenues are shrinking. And what that tells you is that their costs need to be contained or reduced to maintain their margins, their profit margins, and their earnings, or they're going to go broke. So effectively, when you start looking at the Dallas Fed numbers yesterday, saying, the economy, manufacturing, and consumers are down. We looked at the consumer sentiment numbers this week from University of Michigan, And, you know, the average person on the street is looking at the economy and they're like, boy, this isn't so good. They see higher inflation and they see a softening economy. We also looked at the turnover number in jobs. You know, in good times, if you've got a 4.9% growing ball of the economy, people hop jobs because what you want to do is find a better job with more pay, better benefits, and you're mobile. That's the beauty of a system where people can quit one job and take a new job and better themselves. Well, we're seeing a real slowdown in the desire of people to leave the job they have because there may not be a job for them, you know, waiting on the other side. Well, then how does that square with the 9.6 million jobs available when, you know, everybody's sitting there thinking, you know, other than the fact that these 9.6 million jobs, when you look at the increase, they were mostly in food service and hotels, and they tended to be lower paying jobs. So while the good, solid core, you know, middle class, sustainable jobs are becoming more scarce, you're seeing part-time jobs and people who have two and three jobs to make ends meet, the lesser paying jobs are increasing. And that's not a healthy sign when you compare it to the 4.9%. It's inconsistent, and that goes back to these competing, you know, forces, these opposite forces. You're getting good news that the economy is too hot, but when you look at the underlying information, what you realize is the economy isn't that hot. So how do you get this dichotomy? Is this all of this good news just to manipulate the Fed to raise interest rates higher and slam the brakes? Or what? Why is there that dichotomy in this marketplace of information? Another interesting metric that we've been looking at, and I think with the real estate market, is that, you know, as the housing industry is basically stalled out, you know, the housing jobs, construction jobs tend to be, they're sustainable. We also look at the UAW has settled, it's basically a tentative settlement on its strike with Ford, Chrysler, and GM. And of course, they won some big concessions. And of course, we know that those concessions are going to cost the consumer another $900 to $1,000 per vehicle on average over time to compensate those workers. And that's going to be passed through to the consuming public. So people are continuing to look at the cost of living. And when you see big labor raises like that, the Federal Open Market Committee notices that as well, but that is another indicator that inflation is still being pushed, and that's called cost push inflation, where your labor costs are a big component in manufacturing. And now that the unions are tentatively settled and the members have to vote on it, of course, but that doesn't help the argument of slowing inflation. That only bolsters it. So this is what the Federal Open Market Committee people are wrestling with when they're trying to make a decision. Say, is the economy hot? Or is you know, are the jobs being created, low-end jobs? Of why is the gross domestic product, all the goods and services sold in the ball, you know, the big private sector, why is that up 4.9%? And could that be because the goods and services are now priced higher? Is there a 5% inflation number? So it's the same unit of goods and services sold, or perhaps fewer. And that's what this underlying data suggests, is that there are fewer units of goods and services being sold, but at a higher price. So therefore, the dollar amount is growing by 9.4. Well, that's a classic sign of that just in raw inflation. If you're selling fewer of goods and services for a higher price, and the price is higher than last year for fewer units, that's a classic definition of inflation. And if the Fed sees that, they say, you know what, this is still too hot. We're going to have to dial it back. And how do they do that? They raise interest rates. But that has an increasing pressure, not only on the banking system, but also to the Federal Treasury, because they are spending money like, you know, one, just like, you know, a trillion here, a trillion there. It means nothing anymore. But our debt service on our outstanding debt is now over a trillion itself on an annual basis. Then all of these things are factoring in. So the Fed is not in a good position. And of course, we've known from comments from Chairman Powell that, you know, the Federal Treasury is doing as much to influence interest rates as the Federal Reserve itself with its monetary policy can do. Just keep in mind, the Federal Reserve does monetary policy, and their ability to fiddle with the you know, the economics within the ball is raising or lowering interest rates. They can pump money in through quantitative easing, quantitative tightening. Maybe that's a little bit of Milton Friedman coming back and the monetarists, money in, money out. But that's their fiscal, that's their monetary world. Those are the levers that the Fed has. And that's all they can do to try and make this ball bigger and faster or whatever. Fiscal spending, of course, is the government. That's that tax and spend, borrow and spend I talked about. You know, the Keynesian multiplier, which has multiplied us into, you know, 30, it's not oblivion yet, but it's 33 trillion is not a good place to be for any of our lifetimes to figure out how in the world you bring the federal government back into balance. And that's why I continue to surmise or suspect or postulate that the only politically palatable way out is to inflate your way out of a situation like this. And we'll see. We will see what happens. And that's why I'm thinking if the Federal Reserve starts to reduce rates and they haven't addressed this underlying inflation, which in my opinion is to a great degree driven by federal fiscal spending deficits, then we're going to see how it plays out. But that's why you as an individual have to be prepared. And that means getting your ducks in a row. And that means, you know, take a look at your debt levels. And this would be a great time to pay off your debt, and especially variable interest rate debt. Because if you look at Argentina, the interest rates in Argentina a couple of weeks ago, their central bank said it's 133%. Well, our Fed is bopping around at 5.75, you know, they're at 133%, not 5.75%. Imagine living in an environment like that, where the minute you get paid, you want to get out of dollars, you want to buy bricks or something just to preserve value. We don't want that to ever happen in the United States, but there's a bumpy road, and we can see the bumps in the road because those bumps look remarkably like a $33 trillion federal deficit with $2 trillion in additional deficit spending this year, which will take us to $35 trillion. Those are bumps in the road. Okay, and if you see those as you're driving along, you may want to take a different path, or you may want to slow down so you don't wreck your car. But at the end of the day, this is where individuals will want to start reassessing. And I mean, seriously, it's not just giving it a thought, you know, when you're riding the bus one day. This might be sitting down and taking out a piece of paper and a pencil and doing some very, very deep analysis. Where am I? Where am I? I've got income. I've got some, hopefully you've got some assets. I've got debt, and I've got income, assets, and debt. I want to get rid of the debt. I want to grow my assets. And I want to preserve and protect my income. And you want to have a plan, and you want to have a clear vision as to how you're going to do that. Because when these headwinds hit, and it's very interesting to watch and see from the Federal Reserve's perspective, you know, they didn't do anything last time. They remember the Atlanta Fed president coming out and saying, man, maybe we ought to just hold here. And then the Boston Fed president saying, oh no, we've got to raise interest rates because the people in my region are, you know, hurting from inflation. And you have this internal dissent going publicly, which is always interesting, because I don't know if you've ever met a Federal Reserve president. I certainly have not in my life. I mean, they're out there somewhere, but these people maintain a very low profile. Okay, this is not a high profile job. It's a very important job, but they don't tend to make public statements. They tend to be quiet, reserved, conservative, because, well, even if they're not conservatives, they act conservative, because what you don't want to do is trigger panic. But when you see Federal Reserve presidents coming out, and one of them is saying, raise the rates because we got to stop inflation because it's hurting the constituents in my region, and the other one's saying, whoa, wait a minute, we're getting close to the edge. That's a dichotomy, and those discussions will be talked about today. I mean, they're just finishing lunch right now, so we'll see if they mention it over lunch or they go into the afternoon session. But all of that stuff is going on, and I think that's why, you know, as mere mortals here, we want to be thinking about, as the government and the Federal Reserve, both two separate players, are reacting. We need to be in a position where those reactions, you don't want to be, the roadkill on the highway that when that truck comes through, let's just put it colloquially. So you want to take care of yourself. And the best way to do that is to really take a look at your personal balance sheet. You know, you've got income, And then you've got assets and liabilities, and you want to think about that and position yourself well. So, okay, I want to talk about some other information that's important. There's a big jury decision that came out. A group of people sued the National Association of Realtors and others, arguing that the commissions on home sales are unconstitutional. Okay, they're basically that they violate the price fixing laws in the United States. And I guess I'd be careful how I phrase the case. I haven't read it, but the outcome of the case was that the National Association of Realtors and other defendants were basically they lost, and there's a $1.8 billion in damages attached to this settlement. And the bigger issue, and this will be appealed. That's a huge. And I don't know who writes the check for $1.8 billion, but the issue at bar was simply this: under American antitrust laws, there's a thing about price fixing. You can't collude with other people in your marketplace to fix the prices, because the theory is that the free market will decide the prices, and all of the participants in that market, they all have revenues and expenses, and then there's hopefully income or earnings. And your ability to manage your business is maximize your revenues, minimize your costs, and then that will maximize your return on equity, your profits. Okay. And when you have everybody in the real estate business, when you list your house, these commissions tend to be between 5% and 6% of the selling price. And that's been that way forever, at least as long as I can possibly remember. And I do remember there were some cases back in the 1970s dealing with this particular issue. And from the home buyer and seller's perspective, then 6%, I'm going to say it's 6%, could be 5%, but whatever it is, it's a 6% commission off the top. And when you think about a 5% commission on a $100,000 house is $5,000, it's not that much money. Okay, but when the $100,000 house becomes $1 million house, the 5% commission is $50,000. And when we're in these markets where housing prices are soaring and it's demand driven, the demand for houses is what pushes prices. So somebody will list their home, and then all these buyers come out of the woodwork and they all bid. And then it's been around these parts, it's been quite popular. List your house and you get five or six different offers coming in. Everybody's bidding it up. And oftentimes the purchase price is bid up higher than the asking price, quite common. And at the end of the day, there's a premium. And at the very top of that number is 6% of that big number is paid to the real estate agents. Well, the perception of by the public, and that's why this lawsuit was brought, is that the real estate commission is much larger than the amount of effort and time put out by the realtors. They meet you at a house, they open the front door, hey, here's the living room, here's the kitchen, here's the bathroom, and then it's this frenzied market and the price is going up. The real estate people really don't do anything but unlock the front door and let you in. And there's very little I thought they might look at the listings on the listing service and say, okay, well, let's look at these five houses today. So you drive around, you look at all the houses, and then you bid one up. The point is that the market does not perceive the value of real estate commissions to be what they are. The market seems to think that the commission should be a lot lower, especially on the higher priced homes. I mean, you can imagine a 5% commission on that guy on Long Island that bought that mansion for $52 million. 5% of $52 million, that's a lot of money. And, unlock the front door. Okay, here's the living room, here's the bathroom, here's the kitchen. That's the big problem. So this has been a pressure point since the 1970s. And it's very interesting to see who the defendant was, which is the National Association of Realtors. And like I said, I haven't read the case. I mean, there could be elements of conspiracy to fix prices, whatever the allegations were. And I will read the case, but the headline is that, they have a $1.8 billion judgment in damages. And I don't know how you reimburse everybody that's ever bought a house. You get some of your commission back. But at the end of the day, what it tells you is that model for purchasing homes is really struggling in a market where real estate, so the minute you list the house, bam, you get five or six offers. The commission perception of value of the commission isn't there. And that's why people sue it. You know, the plaintiffs come out and say, anyway, you know, this commission's way too high. And unfortunately, you know, that when you list your home, the seller pays the commission, but everybody knows that the money's coming from the buyer. When the buyer buys the house, there's an agreed upon price, and the seller is going, okay, well, I'm going to have to pay 6% of that commission off to the realtor. And you factor that in when you accept an offer on the house. And of course, when the houses are selling at a premium, that gets to be a big number. So we'll be watching that case. I'm sure it'll be appealed, but I think it's an interesting economics thought. Anyway, I'm out of time for today. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Eastman Financial Report and WVW-TV. It's a privilege to be able to talk with you, and certainly we'll tune in tomorrow. We'll see what the Fed Open Market Committee does. So have a great afternoon. Bye.